us as artists, we have to be able to put limitations on ourselves, because now with the hardware now, I mean, the sky's the limit. You can do whatever.
You're just talking about having limitation, like allowing you to like make great music. And I mean, Kevin and I should be able to make some incredible music because we can't do anything. So like our limitation, we're so limited. We're bound to make incredible music.
Absolutely.
Welcome back to an actual new episode of the Two Egg and Cheese Croissants podcast. It's only been a year and a half, Kevin. I think we did pretty good.
That's not bad. Not too long.
No. I mean, there's been plenty of shows that have been canceled or rumored to return and just never made it back, like Half-Life 3.
Right.
I mean, look, we're basically as good. Yeah. We're basically as good as the Half-Life series. And if they can wait this long for Half-Life 3, I think we're doing just fine. Yep. But to kick off this new season with a bang, we brought an amazing guest. He's a man that needs no introduction, so we are just not going to give him one.
Perfect. Good. I didn't want one. I specifically asked. I was like, do not give me an introduction. I just want to remain a mystery the whole time.
Oh my God. No. So with us today is Garrett Williamson. He is a music composer and a good friend of mine. He has dozens of prestigious projects under his belt. He's done Apex Legends Mobile. He's done PUBG Mobile. He did a game called Omega Strikers. And then he also did another game called Fortnite Rocket Racers. And he has just been working on even more projects since then. He even has a Spotify account, which he has awesome music, and he's been releasing for how many years now have you been making your own personal music?
Oh gosh, 12 this year. Yeah.
Heck yep. Yeah.
Which is weird to think about. But yeah, 12 years this year of commercial work out there. So
yeah. And speaking of commercial work, his work on Apex Legends Mobile was actually so bad they just actually canned the entire project. And they just EA shut the whole thing down.
That was
like the minute they listened to it, and they were like, no, Apex Legends, one of the most popular games to release in the last few years, we're canning it. The music's too bad.
They were
not doing
so,
it.
They were so offended. You wouldn't believe the kind of responses I got from the suits. You know, I mean, because there's so many layers. I sent it to the audio director. The audio director sent it to the director. They sent it to the producer. Producer sent it to the executive producer. They all came to me and they were just like, we've got to cancel the game. This is abysmal. There's not, I don't know. This is so offensive. I've got nothing to work with anymore. Any inspiration the whole team had is gone now. So.
Just the whole game. It tainted the entire game.
The whole experience.
Oh my gosh. I'm totally kidding. Garrett actually even made the intro that you just heard to the podcast, which Garrett, I probably think you forgot you even made the intro.
Oh my God.
Podcast.
Is that the lo-fi track I did? Like, holy yes. crap. From like 8 or 9 years ago or something, right?
You would think.
Wow. Honestly, I'm impressed that you're still using it. I'm honored. I'm honored.
Oh yeah.
So thank
obviously
you.
Yeah, obviously we love his work, or else we wouldn't have used it for our show for this whole time. So
oh
we got
God.
No plans of doing a new song.
Yeah. That's amazing. We didn't want to pay for a new song from a legit guy. So we kept using this lo-fi track we got from Garrett 8 years
who
ago.
Who was that guy that tanked the Apex Legends game? Yeah, let's use him.
We want him.
Oh my God.
No,
wow.
I'm totally kidding. He does great music. We even recorded a music video together, which was a blast. And that was
yes.
so fun.
James needs an introduction because this guy is an incredibly talented videographer. And he was the director on Thought of You, which is still probably my favorite music video ever, and it's thanks to James. So big shout out to James.
High praise. It was a lot of fun, and doing it to Garrett's music just made it easy. So it was a blast to record.
Thank you.
Lots of
Thank
fun.
You.
All right, Kevin, we ready to pop off this new episode with the greatest, what is it? I guess I almost forgot the name of our series. It's been so long, but it's greatest video game music ever.
Yep.
Man.
I'm excited.
Let's get started.
Let's do it. Okay. So I'm going to kick us off, and hopefully Garrett will be able to shed some light for Kevin and I, because we are just a bunch of music plebs that don't know anything. And I'm ready to kick us off.
Perhaps. I'm excited to hear it.
As Kevin knows, this game came out of nowhere for me. It's been around for a long time. Like, it came out, well, I say a long time, that's pretty relative. It came out in 2016, I think, 2015. It's a very atmospheric game. And it's pretty dark, but I just haven't heard video game music sound like this in a, really ever. So I'm excited to play for you guys. So, give an introduction. This is Hunt Showdown. This is a cowboy game that is set in the Louisiana Bayou, and there are a lot of like occult elements to it. So the whole game is just like dark, like horror style game, and you never know what's going to happen around each corner, and you're being hunted while also trying to hunt these huge monsters and get out alive. So I'll go ahead and play one of the opening songs. Is the first song.
I like the almost it started kind of, I think because of the low voices, it kind of gave me vibes of I'm gonna forget the name of the song from The Hobbit,
Misty Mountain song.
I love the low voice thing and like how it kind of sounds like a chorus of very a bass singer's doing. I love that.
Oh, yeah,
that's great. I think that's awesome, and I feel like I could hear like spurs in like the stomps, like I could hear a little bit of like the cowboy boot spur thing going on, which I like that little detail. I thought that was good. So anyway, I've never heard of this game before, so I'm curious, like, how did you get into this? Like, how did you find this?
How did I, Kevin?
You're the one who can answer that.
Okay, well, so I remember Jack Frags plugged this game back in 2016, I think, when it was like either in beta or like just came out. And it was a cool concept because it was like a whole new take on the shooter genre, for at least for the time being. So it was all set in like the 1800s, cowboys shoot like high noon type of shootouts, but it was like very magic and occult. So
yeah,
you're not just a cowboy, like you're a hunter, and you go into basically go into the, what is it, like haunted and possessed Louisiana Bayou. It's really atmospheric, and the sound design is really freaking good.
Yeah.
Like if you're walking through the woods and you step on a limb, it'll crunch and like be loud. And now everyone kind of knows relatively what direction you're coming from.
So it has a gameplay element. It's not just like
very much.
Yeah.
So.
It's not just flavor on top. It's
Sound is genuinely like, as far as gameplay goes, if you can cue into the sound, you will have an edge over everybody else playing the game. Like, it's a pivotal part. So not only does the environment make sounds, like there are crows, and if you spook the crows, they'll fly in a direction opposite of you.
Oh,
so
I love that.
If you look up in the sky and you see where the crows are, you can kind of like reverse where they came from and know, okay, well, they just came from over there.
Mm.
So someone's in that direction.
Yeah, and I love that.
There's another thing where they did a really cool audio engineering trick where it's called binaural audio or something like that. It's a weird name.
Yep.
You can literally, if someone's running through a house, you can basically target them and follow them through the house, even if you don't see them, just based off of their noise. So if you have a shotgun and someone's on the other side of a wall, you can totally line up for where they are and just blast them through the wall and get them. So it's like the audio plays a huge part in the game, and you can even tell like how far away somebody is and what gun they have.
There is actually a little bit of struggle in this industry with a lot of game programmers that don't necessarily understand the importance of sound, and not just music, but sound in general in a game. And so like what you're explaining, and you know, that's not like, that's a, I love how you explain that, because I feel like it really taught, like they worked with the sound guys. Like it was a dance, probably the whole process or the whole development, which is like, that's the best way to do it. To get the sound to work with the game like that. And you know, there's plenty of other games that are in kind of the same area code where people, I think people don't realize until you turn off, until you mute the TV or something, how important the sound is to the game. And that goes for a lot of programmers out there too, that especially guys that are, you know, just getting into it. Don't sleep on the sound. Like the sound is such a big part of it. So I love that, like, you paid attention to that and like the detail of that and how important it is to the gameplay, because it really can play a huge part. You know, which is also often a different thing than film, where a lot of times film is, again, maybe just flavor, or it's cool to hear something in the background, like in surround system, but it's not like you necessarily need to hear back there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like with a game, a lot of times it's like that actually is an important part of like the gameplay, where it's like, oh, there's something back there. That's a threat. I've got to take care of that. You know, why do I have a thumbs up on my camera? Did you see that?
Was that you, Kevin?
No, it wasn't me.
I have no clue how. Is that like a new? Is that a Logitech new feature? They've added a new feature. Hey,
your FBI agent was listening to you and was like, "I agree."
Well said.
What on earth is this? Oh man,
I've got no idea.
My Mac is agreeing with me. It's amazing. I love it.
Yeah. I honestly don't think that I've played a game where the sound design was integral to the game. Like, it wasn't just, wow, this sounds so cool. It was like, you actually have to pay attention and wear headphones, or else
otherwise
you're
gonna lose fast.
Which is
probably the reason why we lose most of the time when I play with James Matthew. I'm walking over broken pieces of glass or scaring the crows off.
That's great. I gotta check this game out now. I did not know about it. That's great. I love that. And I'd love to hear from the sound guys on just the process of making that, because that's awesome. Yeah.
So I'll play one last song from this game and we'll turn it over to you, Kevin. Violin is just so emotive throughout the entire song. Like, it's just wailing. Like, it's such a desperate cry of a piece, especially when the violin comes in. And oh my god, it blows my mind every time I listen to it.
No, I really like that one. I love like the creaking kind of texture, whatever that is, that bounces around. Okay, were you gonna say that, Kevin? Like that?
Exactly.
Was, like...
Yeah, the sounds like somebody stepping on a piece of wood, and it makes that creaking sound. Yep.
Yeah, Yeah, I love that. But I love that it's like, even with that element, like what you're talking about, kind of the horror and thriller kind of element in there, it's like they still try to keep that like Western flavor to it. I like the way that you put it. Like, it sounds like the fiddle is like crying. Like it's like wailing. It's so good. I love that one. That one's fantastic. I love the textures in that. That's great. I'm a big fan. Good pick, James.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that's all for today's episode. Just wrap it up. End on a high note. No, like, I totally love the textures. And that was one thing that I was like, Garrett would totally know what I'm talking about, because I have no idea how to say any of this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's like a screen door creaking. Like, yeah, there's that spring kind of like creaking in the very opening, where it's just like that cranking of the spring.
Yep, yep.
And it just sounds so cool.
Yeah, it's a very textural track in a very tasteful way. It feels exactly like how you explain the game is.
All right, well, that's my first game. Kevin, you want to take it from here?
Yes, sir. So I'm going to have to be honest. So the first game that I chose is a game that I actually have not played yet. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately can't speak too much on the gameplay, but I will say it is first on my list of the games I will play next because of the soundtrack.
Wow. So
the soundtrack itself just won me over. A little bit about the game. So Hades is a roguelike dungeon crawler game that basically is just a hack and slash boss run type game. Very intense. I guess somewhat like Doom in a sense, just nonstop action, basically.
Okay. Yeah.
And I feel like the music pretty much captures that feeling. So we'll get started with the first song. I'll start by saying that I guess I was instantly drawn to this soundtrack, because I guess I don't play a lot of games that actually feature, I think that's like some sort of like acoustic guitar or a strings instrument with, I'm assuming, an electric guitar at the end. So I just don't play many games that kind of feature that instrumentation.
I think it's a mandolin. I think that's a mandolin in there. So it's a mandolin with an acoustic guitar. That's an interesting combination, especially in this kind of style. You know, because mostly you're using, when people think mandolin, they go, oh, okay, like country music or Irish music or something like that. Yeah. Special combination of instrumentation going on here. I agree.
Yeah, and I guess it also, like, the contrast it provides going from, you know, your acoustic to that sort of electric guitar. I like the build up to it and the difference between those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure. Well, I was about to say, it almost has a similar Western sound to what we just listened to. Like, there has that Western root to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the next song I'll play from the same game, it kind of picks up on the contrast I was just talking about. So I'll go ahead and play the second song.
We'll be right back. word.
It does. I really enjoyed the build up. It starts with some. It seems like some simple chords with the mandolin, but then yeah. progresses to just
madness.
Madness on with the. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Continue. What?
No. Yeah. Thought. Just well. Basically, what James said. Just madness with the electric guitar.
Yeah.
It has so much metal in it.
It like, does metal.
It,
yeah.
It, like sure. It almost starts out like you're just listening to a really like heavy grown up version of Aladdin, and then it just moves straight into like straight up like metal, and you're like, yeah. whoa! Like it's got yeah. those power chords in it that are just like, dong 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 dong.
Exactly right.
It's yep. wow.
Yep. I'm willing to bet I haven't played this game either, and it's a little bad for me. I feel like I need to because this. I'm pretty sure this won Game of the Year.
Did it?
I think it did.
Okay.
Did.
If it didn't, it was a nominee, but I'm pretty sure it did. The first thing I thought was, this is definitely taking, wherever this is taking place in the desert. That's what this song is for. This is like a desert
oh,
track.
Oh, yeah.
100%. The second thing that I'm noticing between both these songs, and this is coming from someone who's dealt with soundtrack releases and stuff. I haven't played the game, so I don't know. I could be totally wrong. But the way that it plays out in this song, it looks like it gets hard. Phrasing it sounds like it like like goes hard like halfway through, which tells me that probably what happened was I broke James.
It was just Kevin's reaction. It wasn't even a big deal. I didn't think anything at all. Kevin over there with his
yeah,
darn
you were like tracking, wait. And I immediately, my brain just went to, I can hear all the internet comments. Oh, he said,
what do you mean, Garrett? Oh my God. Yes, yes. No, literally,
anyway.
like the progression sounds like it gets more difficult. Like,
yes, absolutely. My guess is that probably what happens is they have two instances of this track. They probably have two instances of this track where one is probably where you're either not fighting or it's maybe a more like you're just running around or whatever. And maybe the more guitar heavy version is when there's enemies and you there's more combat and stuff. You know, because a lot of times in video games, we do what we call vertical remixing, which is basically where you have two different songs that are essentially playing simultaneously and one is muted while the other one is playing, and then it'll fade to the other version of the track whenever something particular happens in the game. And so, I'm saying all of this as a hypothesis. I haven't played the game, so I don't know. I could be totally wrong. But the way that it plays out in the soundtrack, I get the feeling that what's happening is that there's that more subtle, laid back version. And once it gets the fighting, whatever the gameplay is, gets more intense, it goes into that really heavy guitar section. Because it really helps kind of play into what the player is probably feeling in that moment where it's like, okay, now we're not just trying to, you know, achieve, you know, the overall goal. Now I've got to focus on beating this boss or this huge enemy, whatever it is. So that's my hypothesis listening to it. I think that's a super cool track. I love the guitar riff on that. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Absolutely. And again, I don't think I've played many games that feature a guitar like that. So that's what instantly just drew me in.
Yeah. 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 It's super cool. And I guess shout outs to Darren Korb. That's the composer of Hades, apparently. So just looked it up. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Shout out to Darren.
All right, Garrett.
Nice pick.
Okay. It's my turn. Okay. So I'm definitely going to be the black sheep of the choices here. Because probably 90% of the stuff I'm going to share is like old school stuff.
All good. Not a problem.
But the reason is because James contacted me. He was like, hey, I want you to be on this podcast. I want you to like give like three best video game soundtracks. And I'm thinking, I don't know how to do that. There's so many good ones. There's so much good music out there. So many talented composers. And so I decided I was going to pick based on the, and even this was difficult, but the three that are probably the most influential to me, that the ones that have probably had the most impact on my career and what I'm doing with my life. So I'll probably start with, I suppose, the runner up and go from there. In which case, I should have the link here. Here we go. That's enough.
Oh, that is that is so good. Bro.
So
Wave Race has no right going that hard. That is so good.
Yeah, and that's kind of, so I grew up with this game. This is definitely a game that like I played as a little kid. 64 and GameCube was my life. I've pretty much my blood runs on GameCube. So and this soundtrack in particular, I think, was one of those that probably indoctrinated me in ways that I didn't think about at the time, and has ended up having way more, I've realized has had more of an effect over time. But I mean, this is one of my favorite video games ever, and as a result, it's also one of my favorite video game soundtracks ever. You know, it's got the old school Nintendo 64 dinky samples. Like it sounds super corny, but it's like well-written stuff with like the most silly sounding MIDI guitars. But this whole soundtrack is great. It's honestly, number one, all these old soundtracks, I love them because they're always a testament to how great the composers were, because they had to deal with these limitations, like heavy limitations, to like make something sound good and also be listened to on loop over and over and over again with these crappy samples. It's like, it's a testament to their skill as writers to be able to do that. And you know, this one in particular, I think, kind of has become something of a masterclass for me in the art of the loop, which is that, you know, all video game songs have to loop at some point. Well, not all, but most of the time video game songs loop, right? Because you're in a scenario where you don't know when it's going to end. And so you've got to have it loop until you get to whatever the next destination is, right? And especially back at this point, it was like you didn't have the freedom to have really long songs that went for like 5+ minutes. Again, almost always because of hardware limitations. And so as a result, they had to write loops that were like 30 seconds long, and you didn't notice that it was a 30 second loop until you had been playing for like 10 minutes. It's like, it's that kind of thing.
Dang.
And so it's kind of become a masterclass for me in just trying to study, how do you write a song that's 30 seconds long and loops over and over again, and people don't get sick of it and may not even notice that it's looping until minutes in. You know, and so this whole soundtrack, I feel like, is a great testament of that. But it's a fantastic soundtrack, very clearly pulling from like jazz fusion and like Eddie Van Halen and like all the like 80s kind of sound, like it's all of it. And I love it. And I guess a fun fact is that I know you guys will probably know is the composer Kazumi Totaka. I'm probably saying his name wrong. But he composed Wii Sports, so it kind of.
No way.
Now that you know, like, you'll probably start to make the connection. There's kind of there's certain like stylistic things where you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, that figures.
You know, he likes to like everything plays along so well with each other Yeah. And then he always likes to give one instrument the spotlight for like at least 20 to 30 seconds. You know, like it is just that instrument's time to shine.
Yeah.
And then it just plays right along with everything else.
That's definitely a key thing for me is like melodic songs. I love songs with like a really strong melody, a really a melody that's very forward in the piece. And that's not to, you know, discredit. I mean, one of my favorite soundtracks of all time is Skyrim, and that's a lot. That's a texture masterclass. Like a lot of that, Jeremy Soule has just he's perfected the craft of texture. You know, and so, you know, because a lot of that, not all of it. Now, he's great at writing melodies, but a lot of that is also just texture, and it's beautiful texture. It's some of, and it's like, I guess what I love about that as a short side tangent is that like, it's texture that's memorable. Like that, I love that kind of stuff. It's kind of like the game that you shared just a few minutes ago, James. Like, it's like being able to create texture that you remember. So, you know, it's not necessarily that you've got a catchy melody, but you have catchy texture. It's a weird thing to try and explain, but it's like you remember those elements because they're so unique and so cleverly put together. So that's my runner up of the three. So I guess I basically just made top four because I couldn't help myself.
I was going old school as well. I picked a lot of Mega Man games. I grew up on Mega Man 8-bit.
Yeah.
Those songs, you know, what you were saying earlier about them having to fit so much into like 30 seconds before it loops. You know, looking back, playing those games, you know, it never came across my mind of like, you know, I've been playing this game, this level for like 3 hours, and I haven't noticed that it's been looping this whole time.
Yeah. Because
it sounds so good.
Yep.
I don't know why you don't notice.
That's what I'm saying. That's the art of the loop, you know?
Right.
There's an actual, like, I guess, mastery needed to that specific talent, that specific skill in music when it comes to the video game composition that you don't have to worry about with like any other kind of music.
Right.
It's a really, really interesting and fascinating challenge, and it's one of the things that I think always kind of, I don't know, those are the kind of challenges that I love in video game composition. That's the stuff that like gets me excited. So
that's epic.
Anyway,
because I mean, nowadays you don't even have those limitations. You can just basically do whatever you want.
There's no excuses now.
That's so true. No excuses for crap music.
And you know, that kind of goes, it almost taps into the classic saying, like, limitation breeds creativity, is that like we've almost got too little limitation now where sometimes it becomes a struggle. It's like we have, us as artists, we have to be able to put limitations on ourselves, because now with the hardware now, I mean, the sky's the limit. You can do whatever. So it's like, you know, like I've noticed 5-10 minute songs that you notice the loop very quickly because of the way it's written. It's like, just because a song's longer doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be less tiresome to listen to. It's there's a dance with all of it.
It's electronic dance music is the biggest offender of that, where it's like it'll just loop the same dang drum and beats thing for 6 minutes before it changes, and you're like pulling your hair out. Yeah, totally. So true.
Oh, man. All right. James, is it your turn again? Are we going to?
Yeah. I'll go ahead. But you're just talking about having limitation, like allowing you to like make great music. And I mean, Kevin and I should be able to make some incredible music because we can't do anything. So like our limitation, we're so limited. We're bound to make incredible music.
Absolutely.
That's the rule, right? The harder, the more limit, the better the music, right? So, you know, if all you can do is figure out how to pluck one string with the guitar, I mean, we're talking Beatles level stuff happening tomorrow.
I can snap my fingers real nice.
Yeah.
That resonance. Oh, wow. Well, on that note, I will move on to people that are not limited like I or Kevin, but are incredible artists. The people that made this game are the same people that made Battlefield 3. And Battlefield 3 to me is the best first person shooter ever made. Like, it is incredible. And the soundtrack and sound design are amazing, just revolutionary for the time. And they made this game. So DICE made all the Battlefield games, but it's the developers that worked on Battlefield 3. They left DICE to make this new studio called Embark. And this is their first game. And they very much brought the DICE DNA with them that made the Battlefield 3 game so good. Everything is really arcadey, very game show, very flamboyant, wackiness happening the whole time. And the entire time there's teams trying to kill each other. And like when you kill them, they just explode with coins. Like it's very just wacky. And like it's meant to be a mass produced like television show. Everyone watches. There's game announcers and everything. So have that kind of like in your mind as I play this, because it'll help kind of sell the atmosphere.
The song kind of, it almost gives me like Tron vibes a little bit. Like I'm hearing a little bit of Daft Punk in there. Like, and I love that's like, that's a major compliment for me. Yeah. Like I love that. I love, and something else I love is how like, going back to how do we keep this interesting and not tire the ear out? It's like some new element every like eight measures or something. Like every like 20 to 30 seconds there's a new element, or we've switched out one element for another one, because it's like, oh, this is like a cool thing, I'm vibing with this, and I was changing this, oh, this is a cool vibe, I'm vibing with it, like, and it's just like new stuff constantly. That's really cool.
I'll even go ahead and play the next bit, but you can even kind of hear the crowd like cheering in the beginning of that song. And the entire time you're playing, they have these live announcers basically commentating everything that happens in the game. And it got some flack because they used AI voiceovers for some of the aspects in the game. And so that the game actually garnered a little bit of controversy in the beginning. But anyways, I'll go ahead and play the next bit.
Like the new, it's kind of got a new wave kind of sound to it, like a little bit like that 80s kind of thing.
Synth wave, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's got that 80s flair to it, which I love. Which I know a couple things about, but you know, I don't know. I'm
sure you know way more than what you're. Bro, you are such an 80s buff.
Oh, no, I am. No, I'm literally, I'm sitting here. I realize I don't know if the camera can see it. I was tapping on my I've got two synthesizers here that are probably like 12 years older than I am. So like, you know, I love the 80s stuff. Yeah. So, Yeah, no, that's a fun little track. I like that.
So that's my second pick.
Kevin, your turn.
All right. Well, I'm going to bring in a series of games, one that's been mentioned before on this podcast. It's my favorite series. So
I think I know where we're going.
I'm going with Dark Souls 1. Okay. Probably my favorite game of all time. I've mentioned 3 before, but since we had Garrett on, I had to bring out Dark Souls 1, get his opinion on it. I don't know if y'all are familiar with the games, but
very familiar. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't played a whole lot because I'm one of those guys that, like, I know the whole point of the game is it's difficult, but I would still be getting I'd be getting so mad at the game. Like, some, like, a lot of people are just like, they're like, okay, try 37, here we go. And I'm just like, I'm out at try 13. So, like, you know, yeah. But that's me. I've heard a lot of music from the game. Anyway, you continue.
No, absolutely. And that's exactly what I love about it. And I think what one of the things I can appreciate most about the game is there's really no music until you get to a boss.
Yeah.
So at that point, when you hear that music, you know the game's actually starting now. So it's sort of the cue of, like, get ready.
Yep.
You know, unlike where you're hearing maybe like ambiance music throughout,
right?
This makes it, I guess, a little bit more unique to you know, each boss you encounter. So I guess the overall genre I'd say is orchestral. And I know I hate using this word because I guess it's used ironically, but I think orchestral music just sounds epic.
Yeah. No, it's not
such a cheesy word.
Kidding. I'm leaving. I can't do this anymore.
Another hot take by Kevin. Orchestral music sound good.
I hate using the word epic.
It's so true.
But it's huge. It sounds huge because you've got, you know, if it's like a full orchestra, I mean, gosh, I don't even remember. It's like we're talking at least like 20 string players, like 15 brass players. Like, it's a lot of people in a huge room. And so when you have a great arrangement with a lot of those people all playing the same thing or playing something cohesive together, it's huge. It sounds huge, right? So, no, yeah. It's epic as a total.
Majestic almost.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand.
It makes you want to cry.
There's a reason we're still using orchestra 500 years later. Like, it's because it's amazing. So
that's why I love it so much, because it is exactly that. So I'll get us started with the first song. Don't know how else to explain that other than the word epic. I mean, you've got the brass instruments, would that be like a choir singing?
Yeah, there's a male choir in there.
The organ?
Yeah, the pipe organ. Yeah, it's grandiose. There's a harpsichord in there. Yeah, it's grandiose.
Is that the instrument that I was hearing? It's the is the harpsichord the thing that's like stereotypical like castle music? Like
yeah,
it's got like that buzz to it.
Yeah, it's got kind of a high it's got almost a percussive kind of high timbre to it.
Yeah.
It really kind of cuts through. And the reason it probably gets affiliated with like castle kind of settings is because it's from the Baroque period of classical music, which is way, way back, like the beginning of classical music as we know it, you know, where you got people like Bach who wrote a lot of stuff because that kind of predated the piano. So that was kind of the key instrument at that time.
So like 70s.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly the 1570s. I assume we're talking about.
Oh,
and it's interesting that you mentioned castle because that's exactly where you're fighting in this boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
In the castle, you're fighting two knights. So it's meant to sound, you know, like of royalty, I suppose, mm-hmm. or high standing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
something along those lines. So, yeah. so it fits pretty well.
The words that came into mind, like while listening to it, was like majestic yet dreadful, but also like commanding. Like it commands your attention. Like
absolutely.
You better not look away. Kind of
right.
Like that. Yeah. It just totally encapsulates you.
Well, you better not look away or you're going to miss that hit and then you're going to die and that's going to be try number 38.
That's right. You're going to miss that dodge roll and then gone. So that's exactly the point.
Fitting.
Kevin, I kind of like what you said, like prefacing the whole thing, though, that like not a lot of music plays in the game until you hit those boss fights. And I feel like that is like that's actually another really kind of a key point is when not to play music. Cause it's like when you play it and when you don't play it, both have almost equal effect on how important that makes that moment. And so it, you know, when it's like, you don't have that music for like 80% of the game. And then you hit one of those bosses and then the music comes, it's like, oh crap. Like this is like legit. Like, you know, so yeah, it makes a huge difference because of that contrast. Another game that I think of that I know does that is Shadow of Colossus. That game is like dead silent, like for most of the game until you find one of the big colossi, whatever we call them, colossus. So so it's like once they show up, it's like then the big music starts playing, but otherwise it's dead silent like the whole game.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so it's that interesting level contrast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly what you were saying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and also for you guys, little fun little tidbit. The composer for Dark Souls is Motoi Sakuraba, if I can say his name right. Fun fact, do you guys like the Mario sports games? Have you guys ever played Mario Golf or Mario Tennis?
I have played Mario Strikers.
Okay.
And Mario Sluggers.
Okay. He may have done Sluggers.
Yes.
Sakuraba did like all the Mario sports games. I don't know if he did Strikers, but I think he did like pretty much the rest of them.
Okay.
And if you go play those games, you're going to be like, wow, this guy has got range. Because it's a very, very different experience than Dark Souls.
Oh, so he's not whipping out the organ on those?
Yeah.
The male orchestra.
Right. Yeah. 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 Let's just blindfold people and tell them that this song is in Mario Tennis. That's what we're going to.
Oh, man.
Yep. Yep. But yeah, there's a little fun fact. He's done like everything. He's written so much music. If you look at his discography or whatever we would call it in this case, I mean it's huge. So he's done a lot. He's a very talented composer. I'm willing to bet you guys have never heard of this game, and it's because it's almost impossible to find it or play it anymore. It was actually a Flash game, and that sounds crazy because if you actually play it, you wouldn't believe it. But this was a game that released back in 2013, and it was a two-person team, two Swedish guys, and one of them, his name is Simon Stålenhag. These are all non-American names, and therefore I'm going to be butchering them. He's actually become a well-renowned like artist, like a painter, like digital painter. He's done a lot of really, really cool stuff. But he did this game with his buddy back in 2013. And this game, I think, may have changed the whole trajectory of like my sound as a composer or just a producer at that point. And I'll just go ahead and play it, and then I'll make comments afterward. Here we go. Game came out in 2013. It was shared on forums back in that day. I was on this I kind of hovered this site called Overclock Remix. It was huge back in the day for just video game music people, like a lot of notable video game composers kind of the newer generation have come from there or have some level of history there. And so that game was just kind of shared there, and they were like, yeah, it's like the Sega Genesis inspired, kind of like a Sonic the Hedgehog kind of inspired game. But even though it is like its own vibe entirely, it's its own aesthetic completely. The reason I note the year that it came out is because these days, like 11 years later, it's where like anything 80s inspired is kind of like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like that's cool. But it's like, it's honestly pretty darn typical. Like it's a very typical thing. In 2013, we were still on dubstep land. Like nobody cared about 80s kind of stuff at that point. And I would have been 16 years old in 2013. And I just, at that point, like, you know, like I loved 80s music as a kid because my parents raised me on a ton of that stuff. You know, that was their era. That's what they grew up on. But like, you know, as a 16-year-old kid, number one, like I said, we were in dubstep world. Skrillex was the hot thing, and there was other cool stuff happening. Like, you know, there was a lot of interesting pop music and all different kinds of styles happening. 80s inspired stuff was not one of them. And so when this game happened, it really kind of, I guess, like reopened, it felt like reopening some core memory that wasn't there playing it. And it was the first time that I had ever experienced that kind of like, this feels familiar, but I don't think I've ever seen this before. And something about the texture and the style of the music, of the art is gorgeous in the game. It's absolutely fantastic. But that really was super exciting and inspiring to me. And I think that was kind of the gateway drug for me into the whole 80s inspired kind of sound was probably this game. Because I remember after this, just diving deep into like bait, like I think I started following Simon. He would share like it was a whole community of people, which at this point was still kind of underground, the whole like 80s vibe kind of thing. Because I don't think it probably came into the mainstream until a year or two later, you know, like with Bruno Mars and like the Uptown Funk and all that kind of stuff. Like that really put it into the mainstream, and then it was like cool to do 80s again. But I feel like this predated that by about a year or two. It was so exciting to me because you're like going through the stage. This is the first level in the game. This is like the tutorial level. And they have it where you run across like this big bridge and you see this big, like a pretty big scenery. And then there's like the title card. And as that title card showed up for me, that music hit. And that was one of those where it was like, that's kind of that exciting video game composer thing for me, where I was like, oh man, I want to do something like that. Where like we're able to get it timed where it's like, it accentuates the experience that much for the player based on the music alone.
Listening to it, especially in the beginning, I was like, I know exactly why Garrett likes this. And the guitar sounds like it was taken straight out of an unused Michael Jackson track.
Yep. Oh, 100%.
Straight up. Oh my gosh. Yep. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, very, very Michael Jackson. Yeah. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And anybody that doesn't know me will find out very quickly that Michael Jackson is one of my all-time favorites. So yeah, I'm sure that was maybe that was the connecting point for me with this game was the guitars hit and I went, okay, I love it. I love this game. Like that was it.
It didn't feel like the quality of a Flash game. If you would have told me this was, you know,
you wouldn't believe it.
AAA studio would have believed you.
Yeah, man. Well, you mentioning Flash games, I was like, oh my word. Like that took me back to addicting games and mini clips.
Oh yeah.
So hardcore.
Skywire.
Yeah, yeah.
One of my favorite Flash games of all time.
Skywire. Okay, wait, they made a bunch of games. What was the name of that studio? Because they just cranked them out. Like
I can't remember, but I do remember Skywire being one of my favorite and that having a great soundtrack as well. One of the most notable I remember as well. A Flash game.
It was Nitrome. Nitrome developed Skywire, and they developed pretty much every fantastic Flash game at that time. Like, literally, if it was a Nitrome game, you knew it was going to be good because it was just so simple. Very, very simple, casual arcade style gameplay, but the music was always really good. Like, absolutely. It always had really solid, simple tracks. Such a blast from the past.
Yeah.
I personally would like to end on my song. So,
okay.
I will forfeit my last song for now.
This game needs no introduction. I'm sure you guys know it very well, and I'm willing to bet we all played the living crap out of this. And so therefore, I'm just gonna play this, and everybody listening is also probably gonna feel the same way, I'm willing to bet.
My childhood.
So, yeah, it's like every time I hear that song, it's like it takes me back, like every time, and I love it. I've played this game too many times to count, and still every time I hear that, I'm just like, I can just remember being like a 6 year old, like not beating my friends in that game. I was always the loser, but this game, it really was a very integral part of my career in ways that I did not ever expect that it would be. This wasn't one of those that was like, oh, this was super inspiring and it changed the way that I thought about things. It's more that I think somehow I've made more like huge connections in the game industry that somehow come all the way back to Melee more than any other video game I think ever.
Wow.
And I guess if I were to try and summarize like the long and short of it, there was a documentary about 2013 again, I think. Man, that's a special year. It was called The Smash Brothers. And it was a documentary that was just put up on YouTube. Like you can, and it's still there. You can go and watch it.
It's really good.
And it's, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you've seen it. It's really good. Like the gist of it is that it's focusing on the competitive scene of Melee, which back in 2013, especially, I had no clue that was even a thing. I only ever thought you play Melee, items on, and you laugh and you kick your friend for going on the other side of the stage and being Zelda and just taking cheap shots. That's what I thought Melee was. And these people had somehow figured out how to optimize this game to an insane level where they were playing faster than you can imagine. It was crazy. And so I had never seen that before, and this documentary was responsible for getting me into that. Anyway, that documentary, because it got me into competitive Smash, I went to this convention called SmashCon in 2015, and I made some really it's so crazy now because I made some really important connections with people that I'm still working with now, great people, and it was just happenstance. It's not even like it's crazy. But the music in this game as a whole, I just adore. There's so much great stuff in here. It's great writing all around. And it's absolutely one of my favorite video games of all time, and easily one of my favorite video game soundtracks of all time.
Kevin will remember this because my parents were like, all right, you know, you're turning the big 1-0. What do you want to do? And so I invited Kevin and three of my other buddies, and we spent the night in a hotel. And we hooked up a Wii, and we played Smash Brothers Brawl,
right? Yeah,
until the wee hours in the morning.
Yeah,
and
dude,
oh my gosh, I never got the chance to like really play the crap out of Melee, but I did play it, and it was super fun. But it was Brawl that like got me into Smash.
Yeah.
And the opening sound, just the opening sound for Brawl on the Wii was just... Oh my God. I'm going to see if I can pull it up. No, not even that. Let me see if I can find this.
Oh, like the poing?
Yes.
The sound effect. I remember all of it. I put like 800 hours into that game. I could probably beatbox the entire like sequence you're talking about right now from memory.
It's insane. Okay, let me see if this will play. If that isn't the coolest sound ever. Oh my gosh,
so good. Because I don't know how much like you care or have looked into like the Melee scene, but like there's a whole thing about how like, oh, Brawl completely stepped on everything Melee built, yada yada, like it's not competitive, you can't play competitively. And so as a result, like I remember earlier on being like, oh yeah, Brawl's kind of lame, Melee's better because you can play faster, right? And like that's cool and all, like that you can play Melee faster. And I do like overall, I personally prefer Melee. I think some of that is just my childhood attachment to it. But I like over time, it was I remember just having a realization like I put 800 hours into Brawl with my friend. Like I loved the crap out of that game, dude. That game was like baller. Like there's no getting around it. The game was great. It was a good time. No, it wasn't competitive like Melee, but of course at that time we don't care. We're 10-year-old kids.
Exactly.
Right?
Yep.
We were just like, oh, you got the Brawl Ball. Oh
yeah. Man, you telling your story of you doing that, like I vicariously lived through that. Like or through your story. Like I 100% had that same experience. I know that exact feeling. That is such, those were such good times, man. Well, I guess that's number two for me. So I guess I'll go for number one, the final.
All right.
And this is without a doubt, like, if somebody asked me my favorite game soundtrack of all time, this is it. Like,
whoa.
After this, it gets really hard to say for me. Like, then I'm like, there's so many good ones, but I do have one that I'm like, this is the favorite. And it's because it is the game that got me into video game composing. Like, this is the one that made me. It just thumbs up me again. It's like my Mac Studio is just going like, yeah, dude, this is the game.
I can't wait.
But yeah, this is the game that got me into all of it. Like, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about video game music, I don't think. I certainly wouldn't be here as a composer talking about it if it wasn't for this game. And so I will I'll go ahead and play the main theme from the game. The theme song of Sonic Adventure 2, which is the game, like, of all games for me. I wouldn't say it's my, like, all-time favorite game. It's definitely top five, but in terms of its music, it's the key moment in my life in terms of video game composition. I've always been into music. I grew up in a musical family, but I was super into pop and rock music and that kind of stuff initially. I didn't get into composing initially for the orchestral stuff. Now I ended up learning. I love that stuff, and it's like I've come to like really love it over time. But that wasn't what got me into it. What got me into it was this game, because I went, some guy got paid to make rock music for a video game, and I went, that's what I'm doing with my life. That's it. So this was the game, and this song in particular, it's definitely the best of the whole. It's all amazing, but this song is so great. Obviously it's got like some hair metal vibes to it. Like, some people like to joke about the, I don't know if you've ever heard this term, but people call it butt rock. Which I just think is,
I've heard it really that. Funny.
You've never heard that? Yeah. If you look it up and it'll, you'll be like, okay, that checks out. I see why it's called that. Now, the great thing, the thing I love about this song, number one, I honestly think it's a really, really well-written song. I think it's got fantastic guitar riffs. If you go through the whole thing, just the structure, it's just a good, like, song. Like, it's one of those where I was like, this almost feels like it was 10 years too late. If this, like, showed up in, like, 1988 or something, I almost wonder if this would have been a hit on the radio. You know what I mean? It's such a great game, but at the very end, you've got this final really epic boss fight with... I don't know if you guys have ever played Sonic Adventure 2, but...
No.
Okay, so yeah, at the very end, you're like, it's like ultimate anime ending. Like, you're fighting in space. It's like so, but it's like every 12-year-old kid's dream. It's the coolest thing. You're supersonic, flying at like supersonic speeds, just destroying this giant dinosaur in space. It's like as rad as it gets for a 12-year-old. But heck, this song is playing, and in this instance especially, you know, like a lot of time, like with the Dark Souls thing, it always depends on the game. Like, sometimes you need that grandiose orchestral song. Sometimes you just need something that just kicks ass. And this is one of those.
Oh, yeah.
This is one of those where it's
100%.
Like, yeah, like this just feels, it's the epic finale of just like, we're going to take this giant space dinosaur down and I'm saving the world. And, you know, it's like, it's just an awesome feeling. This, along with the entire rest of the soundtrack, which is just incredible. Tons of great music. honestly, this soundtrack probably, because there's a lot of jazz elements in a lot of it, this game probably got me into jazz music. I mean, it got me into so much stuff. I have to say this is like my favorite game soundtrack of all time. And the reason that I'm sitting here as a game composer, mainly there are a lot of really talented people involved in the making of the soundtrack of Sonic Adventure 2, but the music lead was Jun Senoi.
I guess we know who our next guest on the podcast is going to be.
Jun, whatever you do, don't talk to Garrett. The reception on Sonic games has been, we'll say, mixed for a lot of time, for really the past 20 years. There have been ups and downs. But the one thing that most people agree is almost always great is the music. Some other honorable mentions I just wanted to mention, unrelated to Sonic, that we won't get into, but I just wanted to list off. Final Fantasy VII, one of my favorites. Breath of the Wild, love that soundtrack. That's my favorite game of all time.
Okay.
A Link to the Past, anything Zelda is amazing, but okay. A Link to the Past is maybe, I would say, Koji Kondo's like magnum opus. Like that might be his greatest work. Halo 3, love the Halo soundtrack. Obviously, I already went through. Skyrim is one of my favorites. I'm leaving like 50 out that I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's one of the best. But
yep,
like,
yep.
Yeah, those are some of my top picks. So,
well, we'll just have to have you back then, because there's always music that we're going like, oh, we got to pick this one, we got to do this one. So, yeah.
Yep, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, like half the ones you just mentioned, I was like, yep, that could totally be another episode. So,
yeah, great
picks. Got to go out with the most banging banger of all times. So, I think it's pretty good. We'll see what you guys think.
I believe you.
Ready? Okay, so
the award for the biggest liar goes to.
So for everyone listening, that's actually Garrett's song. So it totally bops. This is for Omega Strikers. Dude.
Everybody in the chat is like, oh, that's why it sucked. Oh.
Yeah, right. It's so good. Oh my god. Well, yeah. Okay. So with this song, when I was listening to your portfolio, I was like, oh my god, this is like slightly more electronic than I think Garrett typically does. But
yeah,
like those little bass lines, man, I was like, that is Garrett's stamp. 1000% is he can't do anything without a sick bass line. Like, you always, I swear, if you wrote a classical piece, somewhere in there on the upright bass, he would just start shredding at some point, because it's just a part of your DNA. Love it. It's such a good tell of like, yep, I can tell that's Garrett's work right there. And it's so good.
Well, that's certainly a compliment for me, because, you know, the bass line is a big, big factor in like all the music that I both love and that I make. So if you guys are digging the bass lines, then I think I've done my job. So, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
This song was done in essentially a weekend.
Jeez.
Yes. Yeah. I'll say about the first 50 seconds was done in a weekend, and then the extended cut, which is what most people hear, was finished by the following Wednesday. James Landino, who is the he was the audio lead on Omega Strikers, really talented guy. This was Friday, and he goes, "Hey, what are you doing this weekend?" And I said, "Well, not much. What's up?" And he goes, "The company called me asking me to get them trailer music for this character they're dropping on Monday. But I've got no music. I'm in Japan and I'm flying back. Can you have music for them for that trailer on Monday?" And I said, "You got it." And so I locked myself in my studio and probably didn't see the sunlight for pretty much 2 days. And just made this track.
So can I ask, do they send you the trailer so you know kind of what they're looking for? Or
yeah, so they gave me reference footage, both reference footage and reference music, kind of like, this is the vibe we're going for. It wasn't anything where I didn't write the music to the visual. I think they just were kind of like, this is the character, you get us some music. It has to be about 50 seconds long. We'll edit the video to the music. And so, but what ended up happening is I did this song, and unlike the Apex Legends mobile situation, they liked this so much that they ended up telling James, they're like, "Why don't we just do theme songs for all the characters in the game?" Essentially, as far as I'm concerned, that's the story I've been told. That's how we ended up with character themes for all the characters. And I don't know if you guys have played this game, but basically if you play the game, if you're the MVP, then your character's theme song plays for the next, which I thought was a cool idea. Because it kind of, it gives, again, it's one of those things that kind of keeps the soundtrack interesting. So it's not just playing the same song over and over again. You know, because this is one of those games that was kind of designed where you might be playing like 20 games in a row. So yeah.
So like when you are like assigned a project, or like someone reaches out to you and they're like, "Hey, we want you to do music for this game." Like, what does that even look like?
Yeah, so it's different. It's different every time. It usually starts with just, "Are you interested in making music for the game?" And then we start getting into more specifics. How much music are we talking? How many minutes are we talking of music? A big thing for me that I'm always saying is like, give me everything you're allowed to show me, like all the visuals, all the characters, any backstory, all of it. I want to know everything about this game. I want to know everything because I want to be able to get in the heads of the people that have been, you know, putting their blood, sweat, and tears into this. And really, preferably, the best case scenario is that I'm getting on the project early. I'm getting on it pretty much when they're starting to work on the game to begin with, not as, a final destination for the project as a whole. If I have that kind of time, I'll just start experimenting. You know, I'll get really deep into these characters, the story, all that stuff, any information I can get. And then it's a matter of just kind of experimenting to find what the sound is supposed to be for that project. That's the fun part for me is finding a unique way, something new, some kind of creative spin to put on my creative process every time with every project, because you know they're all totally different, and that's what kind of keeps it interesting for me. Other times they're just kind of like, this is the mood, or this is the kind of character, or you figure it out.
Can you make it epic?
Yeah.
Make it sound more epic.
Yeah, it's just, and then that's when I send them the big orchestra music, you know?
Yeah.
So, it is truly different every single time. It is never the same. And I think a lot of that, number one, some of it is because of just the creative process, just the inspiration. It's just whatever idea hits me first, that's what I'm going to go toward. And then I'll build everything else around that. Sometimes it's dependent on the genre. You know, so like with the Amy track, I'm going to be focusing largely on the chopping up the samples and then that the drum and the bass, because that's what's driving the track. And so that often is kind of the stuff that like I'll focus on with that kind of music. But then like you know, if it's an orchestral thing, a lot of times maybe I'll start that on piano, and then after I've got an idea on the piano, then I'll build it with strings, brass, winds, whatever. Yeah, it's different every single time. Sometimes I will jump right into what might be like the chorus melody or like the main melody, and then I'll go back and put in the intro. Like, okay, now that I've figured out the beef of it, now let's go figure out how to get to that point. Other times I start at the intro, and that's kind of what gets me into the vibe of, oh, okay, now I know where this needs to go. So yeah, it is completely different every single time. My voice memo, app is like my prized possession. That thing I use all the time to just sing ideas into, a lot of times I'll have almost the whole production in my head. So I'll literally sit there and just sing out almost every part, or at least every key part that I could think of. And then get it out into the computer, and record it properly. But yeah, it's different every time.
I guess going back to what you were mentioning earlier, in regards to some of the earlier music and their limitations, when you get a project, do you feel overwhelmed with just the amount of tools you have? And if like, how do you kind of limit yourself? Is that dependent on kind of like what material you're provided?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great question. If I'm not limiting myself, I'll at least have some mindset of what kind of instrumentation or timbre I need to be focusing on. Like what is the sound of this? James had already established the sound of the game, especially with the theme song that he wrote, Go Strike. Really what I wanted to do in that instance was really focus on like, okay, what are the instruments that he used for this? Like what are the sounds? I even had him, I was like, do you have any like synthesizer patches, like presets that you made that you can send me? And he said, I do. So he sent me samples that he used. And so I would specifically focus on using that stuff. And even focus on like, okay, what are the kind of chords that he might play, or the kind of stuff he might lean toward, because we need to make sure it's a cohesive sound, that this all sounds like it's part of the same project.
Make sure it's not too off base.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I think some of it kind of gets built over time. It's like I work on a few tracks and then I'm like, oh, that's a cool sound. So then that becomes part of the palette. And then I'm like, I'm adding that into the whole kind of sound palette of the project. I'll build that sound palette and I'll literally create like a template in Logic. So Logic is the software that I use to write and produce music. And I'll have a template that I can open up every single. So it's like, okay, I'm starting a new song for this project, open up that template. So now I already kind of have my, here's the instrument, here's your palette to use, here are the colors that are available to you. And that's not that I can't like reach out of that, but like, because I'm now in that mindset, it kind of helps me focus in on like making sure that I've got that sound that I've established and it stays focused in that way.
You think you just blew Kevin's mind there?
Yeah, I mean, I'm overwhelmed with, I mean, pretty much any instrument. So, I mean, it's like, you could give me a cymbal and I wouldn't know what to do with it.
Well, that's kind of the... That's actually a big thing that I have told a lot of kind of younger, newer people getting into this, is like, even if you don't play the instrument, really listen and focus in on all the different instruments of the band. You know, if there are new instruments that you don't recognize, you know, look into them. Maybe try and learn how to play them. You know, like all that kind of stuff can really help, because then you have a better understanding of how this instrument works, how I might be able to arrange it and make it work in this instance. So, but yeah, there's a lot of instruments out there, and there's a lot of these, especially with my arrangements, there's a lot going on most of the time. And so it's like, you know, it's difficult to even pinpoint what even is that. So I get it. Like it can be difficult to even know where to start with that stuff.
I don't know much about music production. It's like when I hear a sample, to me, that could be anything from like pulling a bit of music out of a song that I really like and want to build off of, or it could be something that like that's instantly what I go to when I think of a sample. But it sounds like from what you're saying, a sample can be way more than that.
It's a huge rabbit hole, because sampling, but you are correct, and in the example of Amy, that's using certain like sample packs and stuff and splicing them together to kind of get that sound of like, oh, it sounds like I've grabbed various songs and I'm chopping things together and throwing random stuff together. It's like that's kind of the sound. But yeah, sampling also goes to the point where most fake quote-unquote strings that you hear, a lot of which sound real. I mean, I'd be willing to wager that a lot of the Dark Souls stuff is not real orchestra. It's probably fake stuff. But we call it deep sampling, which is where you get into the nuances of these instruments to get them as realistic as possible. So it's essentially at its core, it's the same idea as me just throwing, you know, some song into the sampler and then pressing a key and then it plays the song and then I can, you know, that kind of thing, which is kind of that's like a hip hop thing to do, for example, right? Or like EDM. But it does go as deep as again, string libraries that are essentially playing samples, but it's like they play like the intro, like the sound of it hitting the bow, hitting the string, and then the sound of like just the string or just the bow on the string. And then you've got like samples of like when the player will go from one note to another, because like that's another nuance.
That's another
like,
sound in and of itself.
It's that just that glide right there is a sound in and of itself that you can't recreate in the computer. You have to sample that and then tell whenever I press one note and go to another one, it's like, oh, I know.
You need to blend
the computer
into
knows.
That.
Yeah, bleed in that little legato sample is what they call it. Basically that glide sample. So you get a more natural sound of this. It sounds more like an actual string instrument. And then you've got like the release samples, the sound of how it sounds when you stop playing, like all this kind of really crazy deep stuff. And I mean, it goes even further. It's like, oh, well, nobody ever plays it the same way twice. So we've got to have like 50 different instances of the same note just so that it sounds
legit,
more natural. Right. Yeah, so that's like deep sampling, which is like taking it to its absolute extreme. But I mean, it does pay off, because then you're able to make, if you know what you're doing, relatively convincing orchestra sounding stuff.
Well, I mean, Kevin, I don't know if you had any more questions, but I had one last question. So
I do have one more.
Okay.
How many instruments do you play?
So I technically play three. Okay. I play keyboard. I play keyboard. God, that's the most Gen Z way to say it. I play the piano.
I play keyboard too. Yeah.
You are a musician, James.
I knew it. I knew I was skilled.
Oh man. Yeah, I play keys. I play drums. And I play the bass. The bass is a little more of a recent. I'm just now starting to feel relatively confident enough to say that I play the instrument. I'm still not like I won't say I'm like good at it. I honestly don't feel like I'm particularly good at playing keys either. It's just enough to get by.
Sure. As just enough to make people, a living producing music, right? For people.
Well, yeah. The way that I put it is because I hire a lot of players that are far more talented than me when I have the chance to. And I usually tell people I feel like my brain works better than my motor skills do when it comes to this kind of stuff. Drumming is maybe like the thing that I feel the most confident in. And it's really too bad because I have like, it's very hard for me to play anymore these days because I'm not really in a situation where it's easy to just put my drum kit in here. But drumming is kind of that's maybe my first love when it comes to playing instruments.
And how much do you incorporate into the drums? I mean, into the music you compose?
Oh, I think a lot. I think it's a huge part of it. I remember Dave Grohl of Foo Fighters mentioning, because he's a drummer, yeah, right? Yeah. Originally the drummer for Nirvana. And he talks about how he's like, I think I write all of my songs from a drummer mindset, even though I'm like, I'm writing the songs and I'm a guitarist in Foo Fighters. I'm writing as though it's a drum part. And I remember hearing that and I went, that explains everything about how I write my, now I get why I do certain things. Because I think a lot of the way that I write, even on the piano, how I play on the piano, I think is very, very much based around my initial drummer background.
For you specifically, has there been a project that you have felt that you had to just completely scrap and start over?
That's one of those where, yes, at 100%. There's a lot of times. I literally, almost all the time now, when I put in, when I create a project, I'll name it and then put in V1. Because I have a feeling there's a good chance it's not going to be the final one that I write. So I think to some extent I've gotten good at knowing kind of my goal, and so I think maybe a little less now than say a couple years ago. I feel like I'm able to kind of like, this is what I'm going for and be able to actually just knock it out. But I still 100% put that fail safe in the naming convention because I know there's a good chance that it's not going to be the final product. I never get married to any of that stuff. Yeah. Because I know that there's a good chance I'm going to throw it in the bin.
Yeah.
So yes, to answer your question, the TLDR, yes, absolutely.
Well, that, now, not to make myself a liar twice, but that did just bring up a question with what you were just saying, which is, what's the best piece of feedback or criticism that you've got creating music?
Well, I can certainly tell you the worst. But what I'm saying is I can tell you the worst.
It was the Apex Legends team, wasn't it? I knew it.
I wasn't. You said it, not me. I'm kidding. But I will say that the worst would be when people try to give technical feedback. When people start to look, I think at more specifics, it makes it more difficult for me to see what they actually want because they're just focusing on one tiny thing as opposed to the big picture. There's one time where a director just kept asking for, and I don't know if this will make any sense to you guys, but it's a musical term, just relates to chords and stuff. And they just kept asking for more ninths in the chords. And me and the audio director were kind of like, what more? Okay. Sure. I'll toss them in there, whatever. And so I literally, it's the same song, but I put in more ninths into the song, just thinking, I mean, this is what he asked for. Just trying to make sense of it. And you know, he hears it. He's like, no, no, it needs more ninths. It needs more. And we're like, we can't put any more in. Like, we've literally, yeah. It's in every chord now. And it's like those kind of weird technical feedback things where it's kind of like, that's the kind of stuff where I think the problem is that they think they're helping by giving a more specific technical answer. But that's not, it's almost more useful to me if they come from like caveman brain, like what is it? Nice. What is it that is just immediately bugging you that like not knowing a single lick about any music terminology, just tell me that. And that's usually the best kind of feedback I can get is like I kind of like where this is going, but it's just not melancholy enough. Right. I feel like this is kind of like, this is the character. And I feel like you're a little too bright and happy right now. And there's this kind of deeper sadness here. Could you try and find a way to put that in, you know, cause that's the kind of feedback that now I'm like, okay, now the creative cogs are turning in the brain where I'm trying to think about, okay, how would I do melancholy? Right. And I love to, when I am to any extent kind of being a director myself, I also try to watch myself with that too, because sometimes I may hear what I would do and I have to be careful not to advise to give that line reading. I don't want to give a line reading because a lot of times these people, everybody's got like their own really cool, different way of going about things. That's kind of the beauty of humanity and just the creative process is that we all have a different way that we look at this stuff. And so that's one of those things that like, I have to be careful with myself about is because a lot of times if I just give them like the overall, like, okay, this is what I would do here, but what is it really that I'm looking for that I'm missing here? And if I'm able to just kind of give like that, like it needs to sound a little more nostalgic or sentimental or something. Sometimes they'll come back with something that's like, that's awesome. I never would have thought of that. And I think that kind of creative process, I've seen that as well when working with directors where they're like, oh, that was a cool, I didn't even think to do that. That's a cool idea. And so, I would say my favorite and the best kind of, feedback is that kind of, I guess, caveman brain, I guess, you know, just the music too happy, make more sad. Like,
that's so cool.
I don't know.
Gotcha. That's so interesting.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Because okay. I'm kind of surprised by that because I would have thought that the technical would have been more helpful, like be getting more specific. Like, so it's interesting that it's actually the more general is the more helpful.
Well, it sounds like, especially like if they're adding you to add more ninths for, you know, your example that you gave, technically,
right.
It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Like, so the technical advice is just sounds incorrect.
Yes. Yeah. It's all like, I guess advice for any directors or aspiring directors or game designers out there. Don't try and use music terminology with the musician if you are not like a musician, you know, like, because I've worked with some directors that like, again, like, no, they're great people. And we're all learning all the time. We're all learning. But like, I think they think they're being more helpful by trying to use music terminology when, and again, that's not like their field. That's why I'm there. Right. But like, that's where it gets a little dodgy because then they'll, again, it's like more ninths. Right. And it's like, well, that just doesn't make sense here. It's like, again, give me a more emotionally charged answer here. Like, well, what is it that, what's the emotion? What's the feeling overall? What's the big picture thing that you're like, this isn't right and I need this changed? So, but yeah, again, that's no shot to like, seriously, we're all learning all the time. I mean, I do stupid things and tell people stupid things all the time and then end up being like, oh, that didn't work. And now I know why that didn't work. So, you know, it's a learning process all the time. But yeah, I guess maybe to save anybody listening to this that has any interest in game design and game development, a little bit of headache. Usually for I would say 9 times out of 10, when I talk to other composers, they kind of have the same response too. They're like, I would prefer just a more big picture kind of feedback. Just what are you feeling needs to change here? Like in terms of the emotion, not so much something like, hey, can you turn up the hi-hats like 2 dB here? Like that, it's like, okay, yeah, I can, you're the client. So
you know what, that's exactly what I was thinking was missing.
yeah
In fact, I thought it was more of a 1.8 dB myself.
Yeah
maybe the like the semi-pitch tones were not quite right.
Yeah, I knew that note was just 20 cents too sharp. I should have made that change. You were so right to give me that feedback. Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
The hair on my neck stood up every time I heard it. I just didn't know why.
Yeah.
Less big brain, more caveman brain.
Mm.
Got it. Yeah, well, Kevin and I can definitely speak caveman brain.
Yeah, we can definitely provide some direction.
Oh my gosh. Well, dude, thank you so much for coming on and kicking us off. This has been such a fun time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This was a great time. This was a fun conversation to have.
Sweet. Well, we're always happy to speak caveman brain to someone that actually gets it.
Yeah.
Good. Because I'm definitely best at caveman speech. That's why I'm a musician and not a political speaker.
Oh man. Well, yeah. Okay, so Garrett Williamson is an awesome composer and guys, obviously you can tell. And so you can check out his music on Spotify, Garrett Williamson, and all of his new projects that we will be awaiting as we get to see what they actually are, because again, under wraps. But man, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks again.
Sweet. Well, until next time. And we get to play your song that you wrote as the outro. So
perfect. It's perfect bookend. Full circle.
Indeed.
That's good.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.